April the 1st, that's a good day to go, isn't it? It's a big leap as I step out and see what God's got in store for Moldova. There's a little bit in the news sheet about that. It looks like next Sunday I'm going to be preaching in a church in the Ukraine. So pray for them, because they've probably never seen anything quite like me turn up before. And pray that, especially while I'm away, that the children and Iris will be happy. They probably will be happy if I'm going away, but you know what I mean by that. Big thanks to the eldership team for releasing me to be able to go on this trip with the Slavic Gospel Association. And a big thanks to Donald and Sally for stirring the interest in that. They've been very instrumental in stirring that, because the Slavic Gospel Association does everything they do on the tin, so to speak. They're a very good organisation. And thank you for my wife and children. For the many months in the evenings now, I've literally locked the door of my study just to prepare for this teaching thing in the Bible College in Moldova. We're going to be looking at stepping out in faith again today. And it's a bit of an odd title, I know, and I think Sally was a bit concerned when I sent the title to her for choosing some songs for worship, but Faith That Stirs the Bones. Good morning. How is your faith and how are your bones?
Creaky.
Creaky. Yes. Oh, yes. I sort of feel it in your knees a little bit. But yes, we're still looking at faith and moving out in faith, stepping out in faith. And if you need some prayer cards, then I've still got plenty left. In fact, I've got the little box here somewhere. So if you need some prayer cards, come and see me afterwards. I wonder what your last words will be. There's a cheery thought, isn't it? I wonder what your last words will be. I wonder what your dying words will be. I want you just to think about that for a moment. What will your last dying words, dying thoughts be? Some of you are laughing. D.L. Moody, as he was lying, dying, he said, the papers will say, D.L. Moody dead. Don't believe them. I should be very much alive. And soon after that, he passed away. A missionary friend of mine called John Hindle, he was very, very ill in hospital. He served the Lord in Africa for many years, had to come home because he was really ill. And one morning in hospital, in Bristol Hospital, he said to the nurses, you need to shave me this morning, and I want to put my best shirt on and my shoes on and my trousers on. They said, well, you're not going home. He said, no, but today I'm going to meet my king. And those were his final words. I want to ask you this morning, what are your final words? And as we step out in faith, I've got some cheery words to give you this morning. First of all, we're obviously going through different characters in the book of Hebrews, but Hebrews 11 verse 22 says this, by faith, that means he hadn't seen it yet, but he knew it was a reality, by faith Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the Exodus and gave orders concerning his bones. That's a bit of a weird passage to preach on, isn't it? Joseph gave orders concerning his bones, faith that stirs the bones. And we can pick that up in Genesis 50. It says, Joseph on his deathbed says to his family, God will surely come to your aid, and you must carry my bones away from this place. God will surely come to your aid, and you must carry my bones away from this place. Exodus 13, it says, and this is many, many years after Joseph had died, it says, during the Exodus, Moses took the bones of Joseph with him because he had made the sons of Israel swear an oath saying, you must carry my bones away from this place. And as you look through the Old Testament, there are little snippets of the life of Joseph that go on through. For instance, the Psalm 105 says, he sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. Psalm 80 says, just like a shepherd to Joseph. The book of Revelation 7 says, following on from different tribes, it says, from the tribe of Joseph, 12,000. And as you look through the Old Testament, there are little snippets of the life of Joseph and something of his spirituality. Most of us know the story of Joseph, but it's one of those stories we tend to sort of tuck away to the Sunday school, don't we? We think it's a nice story to tell. Joseph, loved by his father, bullied by his brothers, sold as a slave, ended up as Potiphar's servant, and then Potiphar's wife day after day said, come and lie with me. And Joseph fled. He ended up in prison. He stood before Pharaoh with dreams and interpretations of dreams. He rescued Egypt from famine. He became second in command in all of Egypt. He met up with his family. He saved his family, and his family grew. And lots of times you get this little phrase that, you know, Joseph never grumbles. I could certainly find plenty there for me to grumble if I was Joseph, but we never see him grumble. But very often there's this little phrase of, and God was with Joseph. But we're not looking at that today. We're looking at this whole sense of when he dies on his deathbed, he's saying, when I die, take my bones away from this place. Now, if I was on my deathbed, the last thing I would be thinking about is what people are going to be doing with my bones. It's a bit gruesome, really, isn't it? I mean, we just don't think about that. Most of us on our deathbed would think, you know, have I cancelled the milk? Well, perhaps you wouldn't think that. Or, you know, have I sorted out my life insurance policy? Well, it's probably a bit late for that. We would go through a whole list of things. Or maybe we would be in fear and we would be gripping. During my sort of Christian work, I've sat at the bedside of many people who have been dying. It's been very, very interesting. Some have sort of have just been overcome by the presence of the Lord. You can see it in their face. There's a sense of radiance. And one old lady many, many years ago, probably about 18 years ago, she said to me, I can see him. And she just went away really, really peacefully. I've been at the bedside where people have been hanging on to the sheets, hanging on to every little bit of life that they've got left in them because they're so fearful. And here's Joseph on the end of his life. He says, deal with my bones. Deal with my bones. Now, you could say, well, maybe he was just a little bit cuckoo. Joseph, he's wealthy, he's respected, he's powerful by this stage. He's on good terms with the Pharaoh, he's protected. Everything that life has to offer him, he's got. And here he is on his deathbed, having life just so blessed him at his latter stage. But he's beginning to realize that actually there's more to life than this. And even on his deathbed, he's wanting to, his family to realize that, you know, even in death, there is still more to experience of God. And I want you to think about that, he says to his family. He saw a day coming, a future land. Can you imagine this? Here's Joseph on his deathbed, and he doesn't see his own death. He sees a day coming when Israel will no longer be in Egypt. Now, the other people weren't even thinking about this at this stage. They were actually thinking, well, we've been rescued from the famine. We're doing pretty well. Our crops are growing, and our families are growing, and our cattle are growing. And we're just caught up in the wealth of everything. And yet Joseph says, no, there's actually more of God to experience. And when that day comes, don't leave me behind. Don't forget me. I don't want even my bones to remain in Egypt. Not satisfied even in death to miss out on what God had in store. I tell you, that is astonishing faith, isn't it? He's not even thinking about himself. He's saying, there is a day coming when you will leave Egypt. There is a day coming when you'll leave all this behind. And when you do, take my bones with you. That's astonishing, isn't it? That's just amazing faith. So Joseph's putting all this before his family. When you look at Joseph's family, if we had time to look at Joseph's family, they're pretty dysfunctional, really, aren't they? Anybody of you think you've got a pretty dysfunctional family? Just have a look at Joseph's family for a little while and you'll think, hey, my family's not so bad, actually. But he's saying to them, keep moving on in the blessings of God, and when you move on, take me with you. I want us to look at Psalm 81 this morning, which may sound a little bit odd, but you'll see where I'm going with this, because so much of Psalm 81 describes something of the essence and the spirituality and the character that made Joseph Joseph. Now, this psalm isn't particularly written about Joseph, but it does quote his name in there, and you'll see where I'm going with this. Okay, so Psalm 81 says this, and I'm sorry, Carol, I'm not reading from the NIV this morning. I'm going to read from my book. Psalm 81 says, do you remember the psalm we did 2 weeks ago, Sing a New Song to the Lord? Do you remember that one? Are you still singing that song? Yeah, keep singing it. Well, Psalm 81 says, sing for joy to God our strength. Shout joyfully to the God of Jacob. Raise a song, strike the timbrel, the sweet-sounding lyre and the harp. Blow the trumpet at the new moon, at the full moon on the feast day. It is a statute for Israel, an ordinance to the God of Jacob. He established it for a testimony in Joseph. Now, we'll pick this up in a moment. When he went throughout the land of Egypt, I heard a language I did not know. I relieved his shoulder from the burden. His hands were freed from the basket. I often think of that was his family because they were a bit of a basket case, weren't they? But we won't go into that. You called in trouble and I rescued you. I answered you in the hiding place of thunder. I proved you at the waters of Meribah. Hear, O my people, and I will admonish you. O Israel, if you would listen to me. Let there be no strange god among you, nor shall you worship any foreign god. I am the Lord your God, who brought you up from the land of Egypt. Open your mouth wide and I will fill it. But my people did not listen to my voice, and Israel did not obey me. So I gave them over to the stubbornness of their heart, to walk in their own devices. Oh, that my people would listen to me, that Israel would walk in my ways. I would quickly subdue their enemies and turn my hand against their adversaries. Those who hate the Lord, I would pretend obedience to him, and their time of punishment would be forever. But I would feed you with the finest of wheat, and with the honey from the rock I would satisfy you. It's interesting that this is actually looking back at the Exodus kind of period when the Lord takes Israel out of Egypt, and the different times and experiences that they had on the way to the promised land. And we've got this little verse here when it says, he established it for a testimony in Joseph. There's a very real sense that as we look at that verse, there's a sense where God is saying, you know, everything I've done, just look back to Joseph and remember what I've done, and you'll see that he will be able to testify my goodness, my kindness, my passion towards you. We're not going to look exhaustively at this psalm today. Time won't permit that. We could look at how this psalm was written as a celebration for different feasts in the life of Israel, and we haven't got time for that. What I want us to look at very briefly is the essence of Joseph's spirituality, in the sense of what can we pick up from this. As just imagine, here they are crossing the desert, and they've got this box with Joseph's bones in. What would they be remembering about the life of Joseph that they were taking with them? And the first thing we see here, because we're going to be looking at a whole load of I will and I ams in this passage. The first one in verse 6 there, it says this: I relieved his shoulder from the burden, and his hands were freed from the basket. And the word in the Hebrew there for relieved is to come to an end. And when we look at the whole sense of Joseph and his life and all the troubles and the trials that he went through, it says that the Lord was with Joseph, but his trials and tribulations did come to an end. Whether he was a slave in Egypt, whether he was in prison and he was wrongly accused, we could look back at the life of Joseph and say the burdens that he was under came to an end. We could also look back at the life of Israel as it was in Egypt and see that its burdens also came to an end. Now, the word for burden there is this sense of heaviness. Now, what if I can borrow you, Tom? Well, you were looking as if you were paying attention. Now, I don't know who did the flowers today, so they're really nice, and I'm going to try not to spoil them. But I want you to think of this word burden. Okay, now that's quite heavy. I want you just to put that on your shoulder. Yeah. Watch the vase. Don't worry about the water. It'll go down your ear and bless you. Now, if you were to spend the rest of your life stuck like that, you go to work tomorrow and you go to bed like that, it'd be a bit of a burden, wouldn't it?
Well, it might be. I'll get used to it.
You get used to it. You probably would get used to it, but you look a bit of an idiot, wouldn't you? It would. Now, just imagine that if I said to you, hey, let me take that from you. How would you feel?
I think I'd be great.
You'd be great.
About me dropping it.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Tom. Now, a bit of a weird picture, I know, but what I want you to concentrate on this little phrase of, let me take that from you. Because in the Hebrew, well, the way the sentence is put together, when it says, I would remove the burden, it's God literally saying, let me take that from you. Wow, we see something about the nature and the character of God. That, you know, God is stern at times. He disciplines when there's sin and wrongdoing. But there's also this gentleness about God that when we're overwhelmed with the burdens of life, he actually wants to come alongside and say, let me take that from you. A part of Joseph's testimony that he's so concerned that he says, you know, take my bones with you. He's saying, don't forget what God's done in my life. Take me with you. Remember what God's done in my life. Those times when I was a slave, when I was burdened, and God said to me, let me take that from you. I don't know what you're carrying at the moment, but just remember and consider the tenderness of God, that he would say to you, let me take that from you. It's interesting, isn't it? We just see something of the nature and the character of God revealed that little bit in the Psalms there. How's your experience with God and how you will hear and will affect everything that you do with him? You see, Joseph's breakthroughs in his life comes after trials. Burdens on Joseph's shoulder, a sense of God continually saying to him, I'll release you from that. The second one that we see is in verse 7 there. It says that you called in trouble and I rescued you. You called in trouble and I rescued you. When we're in trouble, do we clam up or call out? And as Joseph's bones are being carried, he wanted them to be remembered through this whole thing that when you're in trouble, call to the Lord. And again, we point to Joseph in this. The New Testament says this: no weapon that's fashioned against us shall stand. And the word in the Hebrew there for rescue means equipped for war and deliverance. It's interesting that we seem to be getting involved into a lot of wars at the moment, don't we, around the world. But it was interesting that one person on the news the other day was saying, well, this war's different because we're there to deliver people. I was thinking, well, that's an interesting way of putting it. We'll have to wait and see what happens with that. But there's this whole sense there that when you're in trouble, I will deliver you. I will rescue. The third thing here is he says this in verse 7, I answered you in the hiding place of thunder. Sometimes we're looking in the wrong places for God to answer us. God always answers in the place of holiness. And here it's looking at Moses and the Exodus and the thunder around the mountain as God spoke. But just think about Joseph's life for a moment and how he led that life of holiness. Many of us will remember the story of Potiphar's wife when Potiphar was away on business and his wife came up to Joseph, and it says day after day she persisted and she said to Joseph, come lie with me. Nobody else around. I've made sure of that. And Joseph could have thought to himself, what an opportunity. You know, I'm bored. I'm only a slave. I could go and have a bit of fun. But he says this, how can I do this against my master and sin against God? You see, God always answers from a place of holiness. And if we're not walking with the Lord straight and proper in our thoughts and our minds and what we say, how can we expect him to answer us? And again, as Joseph's bones are being carried out of Egypt, he wants them to recognize and remember these things about his life, that it's not just against ourselves we do this sort of thing, it's against God. God answers us in a place when he is first place in our life. It's interesting that Joseph didn't say in his last dying words, I'd like a nice memorial stone and this is what I want you to put on it. He didn't say, make a mausoleum for me. He didn't say, make a visitor's center because I rescued Egypt. He didn't say, make me this and make me that. He said, no, just take my bones away from here and remember that I walk with God. You see, this little phrase that Joseph commanded, that take my bones with me, was the biggest step of faith that he ever said. The fourth thing we could look at in the life of Joseph, and certainly in the life of Israel as they're going across the Exodus during that period, we can see in verse 7 again, it says, I proved you at the waters of Meribah. I tested you at the waters of Meribah, where they tested the Lord. And you can look that up in, Exodus 17, if you want to look at that when you go home. And it's an interesting story because as the people of Israel are going across the desert, they started grumbling among themselves and saying, you know, why has God brought us out here to this lonely, desolate place? We're going to die here. And they start grumbling at each other. They're going to start grumbling at Moses. And there's this whole sense, really, if they're carrying the bones of Joseph, surely they should remember if God provided for Joseph, and if Joseph believed that they would be leaving Egypt one day, are Joseph's bones going to be just left in the desert for everybody to forget? And is that what Joseph had in mind? But this was a testing time where God actually proved to the people that he was with them and he could provide for them. God can be here in this hard place. He keeps us in this hard place. The Lord provides for us in this hard place. The Lord protects us and rescues us from the desert. And I look at that and I think there have been hard places in my life. There's been those desert periods in my life. And I'm certainly not carrying around Joseph's bones, but I need to remember that even in the hard places, God can provide sustenance. And as they look back throughout history, as this psalm is being written, they can see that, yes, God provided and he proved himself to the people at Meribah. He also proved to himself in the life of Joseph. So they took Joseph's bones with them, not as a lucky charm, but as a testimony of a man's faith. It was just to be a symbol, a sign that if God has blessed this man's life, surely he will keep you. Fifthly, in verse 8, God says to his people, hear my people, and I will admonish you. Hear my people, and I will admonish you. And that's an interesting kind of word, because in the Hebrew it means to go round and round and to inspect and to pay attention to. Now, just a little sideline from it. This was the first tool I ever bought when I left school and I started my boat building, marine engineering. My boss said, you need to go and buy yourself a tape measure. And I said, why? He said, see how long you sleep on the job for. But it was actually to measure, you know, bits of wood and sizes of engines and all sorts of things like that. The only trouble was, when I was using sort of inches and centimetres, the chap I was using cigarette packets. And that was his framework of measurement. He used to smoke and he would measure my cigarette packets. But as I looked at this, I was thinking to myself, how do I measure the things of God? We use all sorts of things to measure that we can build and put together. We use tape measures. We use about miles and kilometres. And we use watches to measure speed and things like that. But we've got nothing to measure the things of God. He's just so big and so vast, nothing ever even comes into it. We talk about light years and things like that. But what God wants us to see is this whole sense that the most important thing between you and me, God would say, is this, that I will give you my full undivided attention. You may not understand my ways. Isaiah says this. God says to Isaiah, my ways are not your ways. And there are times in life when we just haven't got the answers, have we? We've got so many questions. Why is this happening? Why has that happened? And yet God says, hear my people, and I will admonish you. I will give you my undivided attention. You see, it's time to put down the spiritual tape measure and trying to work things out sometimes. And just sit in the presence of God and just bask in his presence and have this sense of, hey, if I sit and listen, he will give me his undivided attention. My dad used to be pretty busy and it was pretty difficult trying to get his undivided attention. And with four of us in the house, it was pretty difficult to get my mum's undivided attention at times. Maybe I could go to the Prime Minister, Mr. Cameron, and say, can I have your undivided attention? He said, not even for 30 seconds. Or the Queen, maybe she would give my undivided attention. But here, all of a sudden, the God who has made the universe, who knows your life better than yourself, who knows every hair on your head or not hair on your head, the God who knows absolutely everything wants to give you, he's got time for you. And this is what it says in the psalm. If you just sit and listen, I would admonish you. I want to spend time with you. And as they take Joseph's bones, there's this whole sense of, when you read about the life of Joseph, so very often there's this little phrase, and Joseph's in prison, he's having a really hard time, it says, but God was with Joseph. What does that mean, God was with Joseph? It meant God had time for Joseph, wherever he was. It makes the difference when you know God's got the time for you. It makes the difference when God has time just to sit and spend with you. You think you've got a busy schedule? I wonder what God's schedule's like running the universe. Just this little part of his backyard. You ever thought about that? And yet he says, yeah, I've got time for you. I won't even bother checking my diary. I'll just do it for you. If you sit and listen. That would be enough, wouldn't it? And it's so very often we're caught up in our schedules and our diaries. And, you know, people got diaries on their phones and everywhere these days, haven't we? And yet God says, no, just say when and I'll turn up. I'll spend time. Continuing on with this in verses 9 to 10, number 6, God says, let there be no foreign God among you. And there's a reason for that. He says, I am the Lord, your God. And the English doesn't really sort of portray this in a way that we would see when this was actually written. When it says the Lord, it's the word Yahweh, which is the covenant-keeping God. So right in the nature and the character of God, we see that God's never broken his word. How many of you have sort of scheduled in your diaries to meet up with somebody and they've forgotten? They haven't kept their word. Has that ever happened to you? Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Because life is like that sometimes. We can't keep our words. We can't keep our promises. And it goes on. It says, don't have any foreign gods because I'm going to turn up. I will be there. I am the covenant-keeping God. I've never broken my word. I've never missed an appointment. We see it in Joseph's life. God keeps his word. There must be more to come. Don't leave my bones in Egypt because God is faithful. You see, something of the nature and the character of God had already impacted Joseph's life. He knew that God was a covenant-keeping God. Let me ask you that question this morning. Do you know that assurance of God being your covenant-keeping God? The God who's never broken his word. To the point where you, like Joseph, could say, I know there's more to come because God has promised. And even in death, I will say, take my bones with you because there's a lot more to come. He continues in this passage here in verses 13 and 14. It says, I will subdue your enemies. If you listen and obey me, I will subdue your enemies quickly. And again, as we look in Joseph's life, and you can just imagine as they're going across the wilderness here with this box full of Joseph's bones, which sounds a bit gruesome, but as we consider this, how many times did Joseph's enemies actually become subdued? Lots and lots of times. He didn't say it straight away, but this was the foundation for Israel. This whole sense of God will subdue things in his time, with his way. And when we look at some of the enemies that Joseph had, he had his brothers, he had Potiphar's wife, he had Potiphar at times, and everything that life just seemed to throw at him. I will subdue your enemies. But you can only know this if you know God personally, in this sense of a covenant-keeping God with you. Now, just supposing I gave some of you today a little piece of paper with Psalm 81, verse 13. Now you're looking, so if you're paying attention, you can have that. And would you like one as well, Libby? There we go. Oh, would you like one as well? Now, just supposing, on there it says, God's declaration, when you listen to me, I will subdue, bring down, place under your feet, in other words, your enemies. Now, just imagine if you could write down the things that are troubling you. And I want you just to, can you stand up and put that under your feet and just stand on it? Yeah, and stand on it. Can you imagine that? That would be awesome, wouldn't it? The things that are bothering you would be under you. Thank you, Libby. You can sit down. And maybe you can go home and write those things down and put them under your feet. But it's this, as you listen, as you obey, I will subdue. Isn't it funny that sometimes the things in God happen very quickly? All of a sudden, things sort of take up pace. And sometimes in your life, God does something really quick. And you think, wow, I'm really moving on with the things of God now. We could be living in that kind of time now where Jesus suddenly comes back really quickly. And all his enemies are subdued under his feet and our feet. Be interesting, wouldn't it, if Jesus returned tomorrow, quickly? Are you ready? Or are you worried about your chicken burning in the oven? Do you see how our priorities delay sort of things a little bit? And Joseph already knew this as a living reality in his life, which is why this sort of says, and he gave this as a testimony to Joseph. There's this whole sense of when Joseph was in prison, when he was being accused and everything else, he knew there was a day coming when these things would be under him and not above him. He would be on top and they would not be on top, oppressing him. Because sometimes our enemies and the things in life just feel like they're squashing us, don't they? Can you imagine what it would be like just to be walking on them? Those issues and those things that we face. Maybe you can write on that when you get home and prayerfully stand on those things. So Joseph's bones will have a resting place in the promised land, not in the desert, overcome by enemies, heat, dryness and danger. My bones will arrive with you. Even though a whole generation couldn't see this, here they are, they're carrying the bones of a faithful man of God, and they still didn't get the picture. We need to go back to verse 10, and here's another one. It says, open your mouth and I will fill it. Well, I didn't know Joseph was a dentist. Perhaps he was, I don't know. Open your mouth and I will fill it. I went to the doctor's the other day, and I had a carrot in my nose, and a cauliflower in my ear, and a potato in my mouth. And I said, doctor, I don't know what's wrong, I'm just not feeling well. He said, the problem is, Wayne, you're not eating properly. No, some of you got it. Sally's wondering why I'm telling a joke. Well, this whole thing of what do we do with God's word? We take a little bit here and we put it here and we take a little bit there. And very often we're just not eating properly spiritually. And God says, open your mouth and I will fill it. There's this whole sense of I will be everything that you need. God wants to make sure that you eat properly, physically and spiritually. And I don't know if you've watched these wildlife programs where a bird is feeding its chick and it's like regurgitating, which isn't very nice, but it's quite an interesting thing to watch, isn't it? But regurgitating doesn't happen unless the chick opens its mouth. I know it's not rocket science, but the bird sort of has to open its mouth in faith, believing that its mother or father is going to give it something nourishing. We've got that kind of tender picture here that as God's children, as we wait patiently, as we open our mouths. I remember feeding my kids and, you know, shove it in quick and it goes all in the face and you scrape it around the face and shove it in. You got to be hungry. You got to be expectant if you want God to bless you and feed you. It's no good saying, well, I'm going to fill myself up with the things of the world and then come on a Sunday morning and I don't feel like anything. What's your appetite like this morning? Got to have an open mouth. And that's what it means. You've got to have this sense of appetite. And when you look at the life of Joseph, he had all sorts of opportunities come along his way, good and bad, but his appetite for the Lord never changed. That's astonishing, isn't it? when he looked through the bad times in his life, he was still wanting to walk with the Lord. Take my bones with you. I'm not missing out on anything God does. Take me with you. Remind yourself of how he nourished and kept me. And we just thought it was a silly little phrase. Take my bones with you. Ninth, and we're nearly at the end of this, in comparison to the enemy's ways, verse 16, it says this: I would feed you on the finest of wheat. That's an interesting verse, isn't it? Jesus said, I am the bread of life. Joseph's life testimony was from nothing to the best. And this word in the Hebrew for the finest of wheat, the finest, it is sheleb, which means fat. I will feed you with the fat of wheat. In other words, it's the very best. Because, there are certain cultures around the world today, and if you're really skinny, you're seen as unhealthy, that you haven't got enough. And if you're sort of quite well-proportioned as I'm beginning to get, it's like you're blessed. And I was kind of thinking about this, and how can we illustrate this a little bit? The comparison between God's best and Egypt's best. Now, you never guess what I got in here. That's right, you've got it. Tesco's value bread. And this has kind of reminded me of what Egypt had to offer, especially during the time of famine. You know, it was all right. It kept us alive, and it was nice. But you sort of wonder if you could squeeze it hard enough, whether you get moisture out of it. And I wonder what quality of wheat has gone into this bread. Tesco's value loaf. And there's a sense that kind of represents Egypt. Now you know what's coming, don't you? Now, look at this. This says Tesco's finest fat. I'll give you the finest of the wheat, says God. And this is Tesco's fat multi-seed farmhouse batch. You can smell it already. The aroma is bursting out of the bag. And, look at that. Doesn't that... Couldn't you put that in the toaster and then have some butter on it and some marmalade and stuff? Oh, that just smells absolutely gorgeous. And this... it smells like a bin bag, actually. I could get some trouble. Now, just supposing, Sally, I gave you that. So there you go. That'll do you fine, would it? Or, what if I was to give you this? It has. There we go. You, my dear, have settled for second best. You see, very often we settle for what Egypt has to offer. Because at that time, Egypt seemed to offer everything. And all the nations were going there to get the wheat during the famine and everything else. And it was a rich place, it was a prosperous place, it made a huge amount of money from other nations selling its wheat and stuff. But Joseph says, by comparison, this is like Tesco's value bread. Considering the things of God, and you can take that home and try it and tell me what it's like, because it smells absolutely gorgeous. This is what the things of God are like. Why settle for second best when your mouth is watering, you can smell it before it's even open. It's just so abundant with life and vigor and tastiness. And this is what God says to us. I will satisfy you with the finest of wheat. Fat. And then lastly, he says this. And with the honey from the rock, I would satisfy you. Now, what have I got in my bag this time? Honey's getting quite hard to get these days, isn't it? I don't know if you've noticed. You go in the aisles and there seems to be getting less and less. This is natural honey, and it just looks right, doesn't it? And a bit of that on toast or on your pancakes. And it's a beautiful colour. It's a beautiful texture. It's nourishing. It revives. It smells beautiful. It's got a beautiful golden colour. It's soothing. It's got like healing properties to it. And what does God say? He says this: with the honey from the rock, I will satisfy you. Here's the tribe of Israel going through the wilderness on their exodus. And he says, you're going to find in the most difficult, hardest, rocky places, things that will soothe and satisfy and nurture and nourish. And not just that, but honey is such a treat, isn't it? I mean, how many of you have this every day with something? Well, I know some of you do because it's good for your throats, isn't it? But not all of us have this every day, do we? It's more of a treat, isn't it? And we use it in cooking for a treat and things like that. And God says, even the most difficult places, you will see that I will bless you in such abundance, it'll be such a treat if you walk with me. And even in the most difficult places, you will find things that satisfy you. I watched a wildlife program a little while ago, and it showed a tribe of people in Africa, little pygmy people, I think they were, about this big. And one of them knew where to find the honey. It was right up in the tree. And he took his friend with him, and they were getting stung and all sorts. But they, did you see it? And they lowered it down in this thing. And he knew where to find the honey. Where on earth do you find honey in the wilderness when there's nobody experienced to find honey? You can't. But when you walk with God, you're going to find the best. And it says, I will satisfy you. The word in the Hebrew for satisfy means to be weary of. You know, when you go around to somebody's house and you think, oh, I've had enough now. I'm starting to get a bit stretched here. And he said, no more, I can't eat any more. I'm satisfied. And it's that picture to be weary of. And there's this sense as we walk with God, we will have enough. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. It's to be weary of blessing. Can you imagine that? To be weary of God? Not that we're fed up with him, but we were just so blessed by him in the hard places, in the places where you don't know where to find these things. And the world is in that kind of rocky place at the moment where it doesn't know where to find soothing and healing and nourishment and sustaining things, does it? And God says, I will satisfy you with these things. It won't be just one little bit on a teaspoon. I remember as a child just having a teaspoon of honey because it was so expensive. You know, but God says, no, I'll satisfy you. I'll give you more than you expect. So Joseph says, I have found that place of satisfaction with God. I won't be satisfied with anything else than being laid in a place that God has promised. And here we are, we just think it's this place of take my bones with you, a bit of a weird statement. But even in death, Joseph saw that the best was yet to come. Can you imagine that? So as we look at the life of Joseph and stepping out in faith, I will relieve the shoulder of burden. I will answer you. I will rescue you. I will prove myself to you. I will admonish you. I am your God. I will subdue your enemies. I will feed you. I will fill you. I will satisfy you. Hebrews 11 said this. When he was dying, he made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones. Faith that stirs the bones. Faith that moves the bones. What is it that's going to move your bones and stir your bones for the rest of this year? I know what will stir my bones and move my bones, and that is continuing to step out by faith and walk with God. And I want to ask you to do the same. I want you to get to the end of this year and say, yes, I've found the honey in the rock. I've eaten of the finest of the wheat. I have seen my burdens lifted. I have seen God move in such ways that I've never seen before. But to do those things, like Joseph, he had to step out in faith and say, when I'm dead, take my bones with you. And as Israel stepped out in faith and grumbled and eventually got to the promised land, they had to step out in faith. What about you and I? As we step out in faith, we have a covenant-keeping God who will surely keep us. Let's just bow our heads. Dear Father, we thank you for your word. We thank you for the life of Joseph. We thank you that his faith shines as an example all through the Bible, right into the end of the book of Revelation, it talks about Joseph. And as he had faith that his bones would be stirred up and not miss out on the blessings to come, stir us up, Lord, that we will continue to step out in faith each day. That no matter what we face this week, this month, this year, like Joseph, we will keep believing and trusting, knowing that the best is yet to come. In Jesus' name I ask. Amen. We're going to sing in closing, but I have no idea what we're singing in closing. Amazing Grace.